Six Music.
BBC Radio Six Music Documentaries.
I'm Matt Everett, and welcome to The First Time, where we look at the pivotal first moments that made some of our greatest musical artists who they are today. And today I'm pleased to have in the studio two of our most innovative, creative and distinctive musicians. Welcome Alison Goldfrapp and Will Gregory.
Hello.
Hello.
We're going to start things off with quite an easy question. Back in your past, when was the first time you were aware of hearing music as a kind of very small child?
Well, I remember, I think, getting a copy of, you know, the Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra, which I guess is what kind of middle-class parents play to their children in the attempt to civilise them. And I remember going to see a performance of it, actually, when I must have been very young, about four. And I remember there's a bit where, you know, the French horns come in and do a big blast, and I remember actually bursting into tears because I was so shocked by by this noise. But at the same time, I was kind of awestruck by it, I think, and, you know, just it was a window into the power of, you know, what music can do. It can really kind of absolutely shake you to your foundations, you know.
The brass family begins with the horns. These are made from brass tubing coiled into a circle. sure you all know what trumpets sound like.
How about you, Alison?
My dad used to play a lot of music in the house, and he used to, actually it sounds quite eccentric, but he used to kind of make us sit down and listen to something, and then we had to talk about it afterwards and discuss how it made us feel and what we thought of when we heard it. And one day he played Carmina Burana, and then when those great big voices came in, I suddenly just thought, oh, I remember all the hairs on the back of my neck standing on end and thinking, whoa, that's amazing. And just thinking it was the most demonic, orgasmic thing I think I'd ever heard. And I also think it was the first time I actually sort of made sense that it was actually people making this sound, you know, these great big voices. And I just thought that there was this sound coming out of a human body was just all a bit too much. And I just thought, whoa, that's so amazing. I want to be able to make that sound. I want that sound to come out of me. And I was very young at the time, but
how old?
I think I was about 8 or 9. And but yeah, that's definitely had a huge impact on me.
Interesting, they're so similar.
Yeah.
What about the first record you owned, the first piece of music that was yours? Can you remember?
Yeah, I think I actually bought She Loves You.
Good start.
Yeah. I was very young, you know, I think I was given some money and pushed into a shop and told, you know, go on. And but I remember playing it to death on the little semi-wind-up, you know, dance set gramophone, and I still got it somewhere. It's covered in, you know, paint and blue tack and probably things one shouldn't mention. But, we used to have lots of dancing Ooh. Around to it as kids. Well, you know, kids. Snotty nosed kids. And I was sort of there during the Beatles era, but obviously very much too young to really participate. She loves you, yeah.
To do.
You know you should be glad. With a love like that, you know you should be glad.
Your first record?
Well, I can't really remember, to be honest with you. I'm the youngest of six, and so there was a lot of music in my house and all different kinds of music. And I do remember my sister having one of these little record players and used to sort of stack up little singles, and then they'd all sort of one by one, they'd sort of jump down, and there were things like Black Sabbath and stuff like that, which I kind of liked. But I do remember going to a jumble sale, as they were called then, and buying Michael Jackson, I'll Be There, and bringing it home and playing it and crying and really sort of indulging and enjoying this crying for this song. Playing it to my mum and going, oh my God, mummy, I listen to this song. And she's not really getting it, anyway.
This is BBC Radio 6 Music.
As you grew up, what were your musical obsessions? Because if you read about the sort of history of the band, there's everything from Kate Bush to Stockhausen, from Ennio Morricone to sort of Donna Summer. What were the first, as you kind of grew up a little bit and started to really understand music and genres, what were the things that you became first obsessed by?
I was kind of obsessed with disco music, I have to say. And I was always trying to get into the local disco, and I wasn't old enough.
What sort of tunes?
Just all those classic sort of 70s, early 80s disco music, which I'm still kind of into now. And I definitely think has had a influence on what we do in one form or another, from sort of rhythm and vocals to string arrangements even. I think all those sort of great old disco tunes, they often had quite sort of melancholy sort of melodies and lyrics, but then they were sort of against these sort of big dancey sweeping string arrangements, and I kind of like that combo.
Yeah, I mean, in the 70s, there was a lot of teenage kind of angst and trying different things out, and definitely the disco was somewhere, you know, it was a bit of a... Ooh, it was a bit of a sort of charged area, wasn't it? And it was always that last tune that came on, which was usually, you know, 10cc, I'm Not In Love. And
A good tune.
Yeah. No, it was a good tune. It was nice and long, too. You know? So you could definitely hope to sort of have hooked up with somebody.
Are you
by
talking
the
about
a
slow dance?
Yeah,
here?
The slow dance at the end of the disco, you know.
God, I used to run into the corner of the, you know, the youth club when that started happening. I used to run away thinking, oh, God, please don't ask me. I don't want anyone to ask me.
Well, that was always the choice, wasn't it? Either run or stay and sort of tough it out and try and, you know... it was a bit like picking a side for a football team. You felt like, you know, you were when very thin on the ground that you were the last person and they had to sort of go with it. It was a bit embarrassing, but it was quite a good learning experience. I think I'd learnt at that stage that the women are in charge. They make all the choices.
Oh,
so you can remember the first songs that you wrote, I mean, before you met each other, kind of individually. What were they like?
Oh, my God. Well, I remember writing... I was in a sort of... I don't know what you'd call it, actually. A kind of punk band, I guess, but...
What are they called?
Oh, no, I can't even... No. I think they still exist. That's what's mad. I'm not kidding.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, come on, what are they called?
No, I can't...
I really want to know.
But we played some songs, and I think actually I didn't get beaten up, but the rest of the band did. So pretty much after anything we did, they just used to get beaten up. That's what happened on a Saturday night in the, you know, local village. You just used to get beaten up. That's what people did.
Where was this?
Down in Hampshire.
Must have been pretty bad to get done over
Everyone got done over. It was a regular sort of occurrence on a Saturday night. You'd get beaten up if you went out.
Was that a sign of approval, though?
I don't know. No, I think it was sort of just sort of...
It wasn't like being gobbed on as a punk
Yeah,
band.
That's kind of just disgusting sort of behaviour, really. But being a girl, I managed to sort of slink away and plead innocence.
So, I suppose one of the biggest... points in both your careers and a very important first is when you first met each other. What were your first impressions? Can you remember that first meeting?
Can you remember? I can't.
I can't really remember. I don't think we sort of said that much, to be honest. I think we just sort of started, you know, writing something. I think that sort of, and that was really good. And we thought, yeah, that sounds good. Let's keep doing that.
What was the first thing you wrote together?
Lovely Head. I think we just had a little sort of beat and we were mucking about on the keyboard with chords. I think you were mucking about with chords as well. Actually, you came with this really nice little shift, I remember, on the keyboard, and then that was the first two chords of Lovely Head, and then we sort of finished off the little four-chord progression, and then we were off. And then we got some synths going, and, yeah, I think it came together really fast, didn't it? Like in 2 or 3 days, and then... I think we really liked it, and so we were keen to do it again.
Thank you.
I'm Matt Everett, and you're listening to The First Time.
Six Music.
BBC Six Music.
I'm Matt Everett, and you're listening to The First Time with my guests, Alison Goldfrapp and Will Gregory. I asked them if they could remember the first time they took to the stage together.
I sort of do, although I think I was probably so absolutely petrified that, but I seem to remember it being in this funny little square room.
Was it upstairs in a pub somewhere in Bristol?
Oh my God, yeah, there was that one. And then there was another one in London soon after that, and I just remember sort of the audience were on the same level as the band. So you were actually at eye level with people, and they were literally sort of in front of you, like sort of where you're sitting now. And I just remember thinking, this is the most excruciating thing I think I've ever done. But it was also, it was so intense. It was kind of brilliant as well.
What do you remember from it?
Well, I do actually remember very clearly that first pub gig, because I remember being in the audience, because at that point I was...
It was in Bristol.
It was in Bristol, yeah. And it was a warm-up, and it was literally the first gig. And the thing is, I'd been working with you probably for about a year, and I'd never seen you perform. I must have seen you in the studio behind a microphone, you know, doing that. And I think that... So I kept very quiet, because I was thinking... I don't know if actually Alison can do this. I've never seen it. It's a very different thing to actually get up on stage. You know, I mean, I knew that you'd done, you know, gigs with Tricky, so it's not like you were a total kind of...
But it was first time in sort of lead like that, you know, where it's...
Yeah. But I remember thinking, this is going to be fine, this is great. I remember, actually, I mean, it was a really big moment, that, because I thought, everyone in this room is looking at Alison, and everyone can feel that she's kind of nervous, and it's not, you know, the most kind of confident sort of thing. But that doesn't matter at all, because the point was that everybody was totally, you know, electrified and focused in on you.
Sorry,
it's embarrassing to say in front of you. But from that moment on, I knew that this was going to be great, and that, you know, the whole live side of it was going to be a very big part of the whole thing, really.
Talking about the live side of it, when did you first get interested in the visual side of music? I suppose the fashions part of that. When did you first realise that was something that was going to be integral to the way you thought about the band?
Well, it's interesting that, isn't it? Because I think on the first tour, I mean, it was something I've always been interested in, you know, ever sort of from a very young age, but I didn't quite know how to apply it to what we were doing or, you know, a gig. It was sort of, I think it was the music was the thing that sort of felt like that had to be the first, most important thing. So I think with the first tour, it felt a little bit like, oh, I don't really quite know what to do with this, you know. So, but by the end of that tour, I definitely sort of felt quite differently about things, and it sort of felt like, I suppose it sort of came out of my shell quite a lot. And God, how do you explain it? I suppose the two suddenly, that they'd sort of always existed sort of a bit kind of separately in a way. You know, I went to art school, so I was always aware, very much aware of the sort of visual and sound, because I was doing stuff like sort of sound stuff when I was at art school, but I'd never sort of put it into this context before, you know. So, yeah, it did take a sort of first tour to sort of get, sort of know how I wanted to do that.
Because the two things are so inextricably linked now. Which is wonderful. I mean, it's to have music that carries with it a visual association, regardless of which album it is.
I mean, I think when we did the first album, it was very much sort of about I think we were so kind of like, wow, bloody hell, we signed a record deal. God, this is a bit crazy. Oh my God, we're actually doing an album. And it was this sort of, it was so much focus was on the music then. I mean, and it was something very much, you know, talking about visuals when we were writing, which is, you know, we do that a lot, and often have conversations about, I remember Felt Mountain, we'd sort of set up this whole kind of place, this where it was set and what was going on in it, even though it didn't have any lyrics, but it still had its own narrative. So I think, yeah, after that, it was sort of became like, well, sort of want to sort of show this part of, you know, what we do as well, really.
Thank you.
You mentioned Felt Mountain. Lots of reference points made about soundtracks and composers and film scores. When you recorded that first album, who were your kind of reference points?
Yes, you know, Morricone's got mentioned already. He was a sort of big influence because he, you know, he. I think he exemplified, you know, drama and melody and, you know, the lushness of the harmonies, also the kind of bittersweetness, the kind of edge. She always had this kind of thing of mixing in, you know, rather strange combinations of sounds, you know, with a beautiful voice, with a distorted guitar. You know, he had that kind of vision with his orchestration as well that I think was a big influence. And I'm sure he would have had no problem in putting a squealing synth, you know, into a string section.
Thank you.
In 2005, Ooh La La was a massive hit, first top five in the UK, and it was just everywhere. It just hurled you into the mainstream in a quite staggering way. How did that feel?
I don't really know that we noticed going into the mainstream. I don't think we've ever really been there. I think a lot of people know that track. Maybe they don't know it's us. You know, it's that thing where
yeah.
at that point it was still slightly, the name was divorced from the music. And I think maybe that's still true to some extent. Partly because we change our styles so often. And so I think, there's not like the Goldfrapp sound that has gone on and on and on that people now identify with us, because we get bored with that idea. So we always change our kind of outfits every album. And so I think, the song got into the mainstream, but maybe we didn't. I think that's the simplest way of putting it.
Yeah, and I think people at that time, there wasn't really the synthesizer. The idea of a sort of band that had synths had gone out of fashion. You know, it was a lot, like I said, it was kind of a lot of guitar bands, and people didn't really know where to put us. You know, are they a dance group? You know, are they rock? What are they? It's not really pop though either, so they were sort of a bit confused. And also I think there was quite a lot of snobbery still about synths. You know, if you played the guitar, you were kind of a serious musician. If you played synths, it was a bit, you know, they're not real. I don't think people quite knew how to figure out. Now, of course, it's like electropop is this word that is used every day, and you know, every band in the charts has got a synth in it, and there's much more of a mix of genres. Whereas then it was still quite, I mean, Portishead were doing sort of string arrangements with breakbeats, but there wasn't really sort of big synths and drums at that, and sort of rock, and I mean, it just wasn't that sort of thing around. So I think people were a bit confused about it.
The album that followed, Seventh Tree in 2008, it's almost a complete left turn, which was greeted by it was like Dylan going electric. What have they done? They've created this sound that's become massively popular, and they can make loads of money, and they've done something completely different. I mean, is it always an intentional thing to stay restless, to change your styles, as, you know, as often as is possible, I suppose.
It's not really a conscious thing, though. I mean, I for better or worse, we did Seventh Tree, and we really loved that album, but you know, we didn't. It wasn't like we deliberately set out to confuse people, or you know, right? We must do something different. Really doesn't happen like that. It's just something that you, you know, you start writing and playing, and you just go with whatever feels good at that time. And but I think it was a bit of a reaction to the tour and the sound, and it felt quite overwhelming in a way.
So with the new album, Head First. It does feel like a combination of all the albums to date to an extent. Would you say that's a fair comment?
Well, there's no ballads on there. but maybe... I think it feels like we've... In our lives, we've written, you know, most of the ballads we're going to write. We've written quite a lot of them. And so I think with this one, we wanted to just keep that up pulse going. So, in fact, all the tracks, even the voice thing without any drums, is quite fast, actually. And so... I think that in that sense, you know, maybe we'll come back to that really slow thing at some point. But I do think that this, I think we're always trying to improve our songwriting. So hopefully it does, you know, bring together some of whatever experience you might say that we've had by writing together to a point where hopefully it feels like we sort of know what we're doing, although we still don't really know what a middle eight is, but... That's another story.
Doesn't matter. Mm. We've had all these firsts. What's the last? What's the last thing we should play?
Ooh, choices.
Mm-hmm.
I reckon, would it be too radical to play Voice Thing? Okay, yeah, that'd be good.
Why that?
I guess, well, it's very, very different to the rest of the album. Quite good for a Sunday afternoon, I reckon.
Helping you digest.
Thank you very much for your time, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. The people.
Something that's really ancient, which is connection.
The remarkable Brittany Howard.
It was beautiful. That was an extraordinary set.
I don't think I've ever seen anything like it.
I can't believe he's here.
I've been wanting to see him for a very long time.
One of the great pianists of the world.
Give a massive welcome to Roisin Murphy.
She just dropped into my top five gigs of all time.
I feel really lucky and happy to be a part of such a wonderful festival.
You go all around the world, there's only one station like this. I want to say thank you to Six Music.
Relive an extraordinary weekend of live performances.
Listen on BBC Sounds and watch on iPlayer.